Blog Talk Radio.
Hermetic Hour for Thursday, the 23rd of February, 2012. Tonight we present a report by your host, Paul Runyon, that's myself, on the recent Pantheacon convention in San Jose, California, from the 17th through the 20th of this month. This gathering of neo-pagan tribes, magical lodges, and Wiccan covens was attended by 2,000 colorful characters with nearly 100 events, lectures, ritual presentations, and handcrafted treasures for collectors of the exotic. We attended as part of the Farifarian entourage and helped Farifarian's leader, Joe Carson, to present an enchanted Omelk rite that featured talented dancers, musicians, and an experienced cast of ritualists. Lady Jo will be calling in to discuss this event with us and her upcoming book on Farifarian. We also attended lectures and classes given by our friends Chick and Tabitha Cicero and Lon Milo Duquette. And we touched base with Ed Fitch, who was there promoting his forthcoming book, Pirate Magic, or is it Pyrite, P-Y-R-A-T-E, Magic, Org. And a great time was had by all, so we, as we said, tune in and we'll share the magic with you. Now we'll have Lady Jo Carson calling us in about another 14 minutes. And meanwhile, I'm going to see if I can read here a little bit from the Pantheacon program, so you know their background. It says, welcome to the 18th annual Pantheacon, our wonderful gathering of the tribes and the largest annual pagan convention in the U.S. The Bay Area has a wide range of pagan reconstructionalists and nature religions that meet and mingle here. Once again, we offer the best events and the most knowledgeable speakers that the West and beyond has to offer. Now, they certainly delivered on that one. Pantheacon was in San Jose, which, of course, is a very, very beautiful city in Northern California. And that's where the Rosicrucian Park is, and it's just a really beautiful town. And the event was held at the DoubleTree Hotel, and this is a huge, huge hotel. The hotel's designed as a convention center. And so we had, I estimated, around 2,000 participants, and easily close to 100 events. They were and they were beautifully organized. The whole thing was just beautifully, beautifully organized. And so we got to meet. We saw so many people up there that we knew, and we all got together. Now, of course, we were there primarily to support Joe Carson and the Farifarian group to put on the Omelk ritual. And Joe had sent us the scripts, and we were prepared for it. And we, brought up some old Farifarian robes along with our you know, ritual equipment, whatever. And we put on, that ceremony was just absolutely beautiful. And Joe should get a lot of credit for doing that. It was just really beautiful. It was magic. And also, we listened to Lon Duquette, sat in on Lon Duquette's talk on the Holy Guardian Angel, and that was fascinating. And Lon recognized when he had about 100 people in there, and I came in. We came in just a little bit late, and Lon looked for all the way, you know, from back to the back door, and up he was up on the podium, and he says, "Poke." And I, you know, and everybody turned around and looked at me, and I said, "I didn't do it, and I'll never do it again." And we all were going to laugh out of that. But then, of course, we also attended classes by Maestro Chick Cicero, who is, in my opinion, the ranking Golden Dawn officer in the country. And he had a terrific class on Kamehameha, so the construction, the real construction of the Kamehameha magic squares. This was fascinating. And then we later attended another fascinating discussion of his, where he talked about how he met Rigardi in the 1980s and also Grady McMurtry, and how he got his first Golden Dawn Temple started in Columbus, Georgia, and just really, really fascinating. And he gave us all kind of inside details and humor, and it was really, really excellent. And then, of course, Ed Sitch was up there, and he was promoting a forthcoming book he has on pirate magic, and Dave Finnan was along with him. And so we hung out with them, and a lot of people that we knew. One of the things I will mention too is when we were listening to attending Chick Cicero's lecture on the background with his background with Rigardi and of course with McMurtry and the rest of the old guard, so to speak. No sooner did this lecture terminate than I got kind of surrounded by a group of people from Seattle, from Laura Jennings and Peter York's Golden Dawn up in Seattle. And back when they would be in Los Angeles that must have been at least 12 years ago. And these folks came up and said, Poke, we remember you initiated us, you know." And I remember, of course, that I'd been sitting in the West for Laura. And sure, they, all these people, and they remembered me. And I remembered all of them. But, it's kind of, you know, we had a good kind of a get-together meeting in that respect. And so this was really a gathering of the tribes. Now, you're down there in the foyer of the hotel, which is a great big long foyer. It was just crowded with these people in these gorgeous costumes and their faces painted, and they're you know, wearing this wonderful handcrafted implements and regalia and whatever. It made you aware that the pagan movement that we fortunately I think we can say we kind of helped start it off back with, well, Fred Adams Ferreira obviously was one of the first in California, and I get a feeling like, oh boy, look what it is we had a hand in getting started, and how it flowered, and so that was really, really good. And also too, the vendor section, great big bazaar, and I was just really overwhelmed with the quality and the skill and the craftsmanship of these implements and jewelry and costumes and drums and musical instruments. I bought a shaman's drum. I couldn't resist it. Even though we already have a couple of them, I just had that this thing was just really, oh, it's terrific, and we were just in a, it was like being in a Bazaar of the Bazaar. and it was really, really wonderful. And now the primary purpose of our going up there was, of course, to support Farrafaria, and which Joe Carson is really, really revived and and brought back to life in a beautiful, beautiful way. And she has a wonderful group of primarily ladies, and as I think Fred would have liked, so we did the the oat milk ceremony, and Joe will be calling in just a few minutes. And let me just say this: Joe has a video which we offered for sale after the ritual, and we have sold a few copies of it. She has a video, Dancing with Gaia, which is absolutely a masterpiece. It really is beautiful. Jo is a talented filmmaker. She's worked for Lucas before. She's, this Dancing with Gaia is filmed all over the Europe and the Western world, Mediterranean. Jo spent, about 15 years or more filming this, putting this film together. This is, and Fred, of course, Fred Adams is, he is kind of the linchpin of the film, because there are several interviews with him, and he shows how to do landform yoga and gives his philosophy. But she also visits lady shamans in Britain and in Europe and whatever, and so the film is it's called Dancing with Gaia, and it's really, really beautiful, and I want to recommend that video to you, and of course Joe will tell you a little bit about that when she calls in. The oat milk ceremony was held in a large room, and we did have fairly good control of the lighting, which was good. But other than that, it was, there was no set or anything like that. It was a big, comfortable room with a high ceiling. And the ritual, the way it was staged and the way it was done, it transported me right out into the wilderness. Because we naturally, in Farrafaria, we did a number of our ceremonies, or tried to do a number of our ceremonies out in the wilderness, and we usually did, and this time, of course, we couldn't very well do that, so we had to do it indoors, and yet we had the sensation of actually being in the wilderness. And I remember now I took one of the priest roles, and we opened the temple by unsealing the astral doors, I don't want to. Maybe I can get Joe when she gets on. We can open this temple. I don't want to read her part. I'll let her read that. But I can go into some of this a little further down the line. One of these lines is. And what we do here is we go around to the quarters, and we invoke the goddesses of the quarters and the gods of the quarters. And I was facing the east at one point, and I intoned Athiades, great phase of the east, dawn and spring, join us here and now in the fairy ring between the worlds. Through the portal twixt moon and sun, re-enter your earth abodes from the far, far fairyland of stars. Oh boy! And I held the wand up and facing the southeast and the cross quarter point, I intone, we call forth fairy elementals of air and scent. May sylphs of the air bless this whole planet and its surround. This is the kind of magic that Farrafaria does best, and that's blessing the actual landforms of nature and the spirits, the goddesses and the fays and the fairies of the natural environment. And it ensouls the environment. It spiritualizes the environment. And it spiritualizes you in tune with the environment. And Fred and Svetlana, now one of the things that we should definitely do at this point, and before I somehow or other manage to slip by it, I want to say this. Svetlana Guterin, Lady Svetlana of Farfaria, was in many ways as important to Farfaria and the creation of the rituals as Fred was. And one of the reasons why Joe, are you there?
Hi, Fred. Hi, Poke. Yeah, I'm here.
Hi. Just let me finish what I was going to say about Svetlana. I was going to say that we need to, now at this point, we need to recall that Lady Svetlana wrote beautiful rituals. In fact, she is responsible for many of the Farfarian rituals, which we now are reconstructing and we now have on the internet available and everything. And so I want to make sure that people understand that it was Fred and Svetlana's Farfaria. So would you tell us a bit about the ceremony and what the purpose of it was and how you conceived setting it up and whatever? Just
sure, I'll be happy to. Thanks for having me on the show. Oy milk or Candlemas or Bridget, which is kind of, you know, turned into Groundhog Day here in the U.S., but that's the moment in time that it celebrates. For Farfaria is a recognition that this is the time of waters, and very much, especially here in California, it's when we usually get our big deluge of rain coming down, is right around this time of year. The rain that, you know, washes things away and purifies us, but also allows the new growth to come forth. And the way we see the progress of the goddess, which is sort of Gaia, the earth goddess in this case, going through her annual journey from being the young child playing and then going together with the young god and getting together, and then they have their sacred marriage in the summer, and she is impregnated and goes under the earth in the fall at Samhain. She is in her caves, and then through the winter she gestates and grows the new baby of the new year. So what we have occurring right now at Oy Milk, now we're actually just past that moment, but that's what we were celebrating, is that the goddess is now being brought forth from her cave under the earth and coming out into the daylight. So it's a time of rain, but we are bringing the goddess forth. And what the earth is doing, what we see around us, is that there's new buds on the branches. There's new shoots of green coming forth from the earth. And so the seeds that have been planted in the ground are now starting to come forth into the light. And so we literally had a ritual where we made sacred space. We called the fairies to join us, with the elemental fairies and the fairies of the other dimensions, created our sacred space, and then we formed pairs and made a vast procession all the way around the circle and then into a different part of the room. Unfortunately, they gave us a really large room to work with, and processed over to a different area where we had a beautiful statue of Poseidon being riding on a pair of seahorses with his hair blowing in the breeze, a large statue, and I mean relatively large, 2 or 3 feet, up on a stand, and he was covered. And so then we called him forth. He was uncovered. We gave him recognition and blessing and songs of appreciation. And then we sprinkled ourselves. We were sprinkled by the salt waters from the seas as a purification. And then we did a trance journey to go into that other world even more deeply than we already were. And everybody had a chance to really ponder what are their seeds for their own selves for the new year they're going to be coming forth. So we got together with, you know, whatever elementals, especially the fairy, were called on to help us with that, and had our trance journey. And then we came out of the trance journey and processed further over to a different part of the room, where we had a statue, another hidden statue of Amphitrite, who is the goddess of the sea, because there's Poseidon, but his partner is Amphitrite. She's very not so well known. But we again called her forth and gave her a beautiful dance of blessing. And in that case, we had water dashed upon us. And so it was another level of water, you know, coming onto us to purify us and to sort of fructify us for the next year. And we called on the goddess then to come forth from her place, you know, nearby, also in this other world that we were traveling in. And she came dancing forth and blessed us all, and she's pregnant, and she has veils over her pregnancy. But she danced very beautifully, and she gave us the blessings, and she led us back as a group. And everybody, we could only use fake candles because they can't have any real candles indoors, but we all had these little battery-operated candles. Everybody was holding hands, and we processed all the way back into the circle and around it, and placed the candles at the foot of the goddess. And it was a really nice journey, and it was literally a physical journey where we traveled around the room and then back into the circle. That was kind of the core of the mysteries, and then we basically celebrated after that. But it was just lovely. We brought the energy up to a nice peak celebrating there.
Now, one thing I wanted to definitely discuss is the talent that you got together for this. We had a very fine musician who played a unique instrument.
Oh, right. Matt Venuti, yeah, playing the hang instrument. And he's a professional, but was willing to play with us for this. And he's drawn to this form of spirituality. And so it was just wonderful having him there. His instrument, which he did not invent it, but it's very unusual. I've never seen anyone else play it. And it consists of, it's a disc of metal, kind of flattened disc, that's maybe 2.5 feet across. And it sounds a little bit like a harp, but it has echoes in it. He kind of rubs it and pats it and taps it and just makes these echoey sounds with different levels of tonality. And it's very melodic, but it's also a percussion instrument. It's not terribly loud. But when you have a quiet crowd that's listening, it's just perfect and very otherworldly.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing, and I got a chance to talk with him a little bit afterward, and he was very very pleased to be able to share it with us. But it's a unique instrument. I'd like to somehow or other I'd like to get one and use it down here. The other things that we want to mention is that you also had a wonderful dancer, interpretive dancer, and would you talk a little bit about her, what she did, and also the lady
Irina,
that played,
Irina Nichols. Her name is Irina Nichols, and how I found her a number of years ago. Somehow I found out that there was going to be this serpent dance concert or serpent concert of some sort in San Francisco, and I was like, well, this, I don't know what it is, but somehow it sounds good. And so I went there, and it was a presentation with a bunch of different people doing different things at different times, and each one of them was somehow focused around snakes and serpents. And so there were people who were dancing with live serpents. There were other people who were embodying serpents with their dance. There were people who had, papier-mâché serpents that they were in some way or another performing with. There was a woman who was very visibly, hugely pregnant, and people kind of did a goddess dance around her in a serpentine pattern. And it turned out that Irina Nichols produced that event. And so that's actually how I met her. And we formed a friendship, and we kind of have been in touch ever since. And in fact, thinking back on it, it goes a little further back than that, because I remember that I was able to actually film that event, and I used a little bit of that in Dancing with Gaia, which was a number of years ago. But that it's just incredibly wonderful material, and rather erotic, really. I mean, it's very charged material. But Irina is, I think you could call her a professional belly dancer or a Middle Eastern-style dancer.
Yeah.
With a lot of, spirit for Fair Faria. She just loves Fair Faria. So I think it was always very sad for her that she never got to actually meet Fred, because she had wanted to for so many years, but he just was too ill towards his latter days to meet with new people, But she's up there.
Describe for us. Yeah.
yeah. She lives north
would you,
of here.
Well,
yeah.
Excuse me. I thought you were getting to the end of that, and I was going to ask you another question. But what do you want? Well, go ahead, finish up.
No. I'm not really sure if she's got like a website or anything. I don't really know that she does. But if anybody wanted to find her, I'm sure that I could give her contact information if someone wanted to get a hold of me through. I'm available either through. DancingWithGaia.com, which is the website for the film that Polk was describing, or through FarrahFaria.com,
mm-hmm.
which is our new website. Yay! I've got to talk about this for a second.
Well, come on now. Tell us that a couple of times.
Our local website for FarrahFaria, because FarrahFaria had a website being run. The only one really active was by our member in Amsterdam, Peter Tromp, who's fabulous, and he has a nice website for FarrahFaria with a rather extremely long name, difficult to find. But that is up and has been up for a number of years with a lot of material on it. But we wanted to have a locally run FarrahFaria website just because then we can just, you know, add things to it really quickly and have a lot more local influence, you know, and just keep adding more and more material to it. So now, as of just a few days ago, just the day before PantheaCon, we did get that website live. And we have a lot of material on it, but there's a lot of material yet to come on it. However, I do now have the oy milk ceremony that we just performed is now live on that website, so I'm happy about that. The only thing we don't have on there that I really care about a lot right now is the art. I want to get a lot of art on there, and that's something we just haven't quite gotten to yet.
Yeah. Something else about the ceremony, or the many things about the ceremony that we could talk about, but one of the most effective aspects was this concentric circle dance, and where you have the outer circle going deicil, and the inner circle looking outward and going widdershins. And then what happens is as you go around, you confront and relate to the person going the other way. And we went faster and faster and faster, and we had a chant, and I just felt like this was just one of the most, mystical induction. It really was. It was the induction of a mystical experience in the Dionysian mode. Now, you want to tell us a little bit about how you came up with that and how that worked?
Well, let's see. I've done a lot of, I guess, what you call the spiral dance format, which is, you know, similar in the sense that they're, you know, you do have a chance to look at other people as you go by them. And I didn't want to do exactly that. A lot of people in the Bay Area especially are familiar with that, but other people that have been involved with reclaiming are very, very familiar with it, and it's been around for a while. I wanted to do something different, and I wanted to especially have the influence of when I was really getting involved in kind of studying Eastern mysticism and Tantra was the puja format, where it's really specifically that you're looking, there's people on the inside looking at people at the outside. You have a heartfelt connection with each and every single person that goes by you, and then you have another person, you have a heartfelt connection. It kind of, there's this change, you know, as each person comes up to you, if you have a new person to relate to, and it's always different for every person. So I wanted to kind of come up with something sort of between those two experiences, and that's what I came up with, was this format. But what happened was, and it kind of had its own energy, was, is that it did speed up, and it was we were all chanting Corey Spirit Now Appear in Mystery Raiment of the Year, and then there would be an alternate verse, and then Corey Spirit Now Appear in Mystery Raiment of the Year. But as we got faster, it kind of went down to the bare-bones element of Corey Spirit Now Appear, and then Corey Spirit, Corey Spirit, Corey Spirit. And that, at a certain point, people just are just chanting Corey Spirit, Corey Spirit, and then it's getting louder and louder, and we're sort of slowing down, stomping our feet more and more, and our hands are rising up, and we're all just kind of, you know, vibrating with that spirit, you know.
Oh, it
was very powerful. It was wonderful. A lot of fun, really.
It reminded me, in a way, although it's not quite the same thing, but it's that, you remember the Wiccans used to talk about raising the cone of power.
Sure.
Oh, this was, and one of the things, of course, I want to mention about this particular thing is that we had, I don't know whether you recall this show or whether you heard it, but we had Joseph Farrell on a few weeks ago on Alchemy. And Joseph Farrell has done quite a bit of research on the spiral effect and the centrifugal effect, what in physics is called torsion, in alchemy. And basically, what we're talking about is just exactly that dance was a form of spiral centrifugal torsion alchemy.
Good.
And I thought about that, and I thought, my gosh, you know, this is like the bell, or like the integratron out in Joshua Tree, or whatever. This is an alchemical process, and we're doing it physically. And it almost proves the point. I thought it was absolutely, totally magical. Let me put it that way. I'd like you to talk about the book that you have coming up on Farrafaria, because of course we've got advance rough copies of this that are just fascinating, and tell us a little bit about that, and when you think it's going to be ready, and what we're doing.
Well, it had to take a back seat for a couple months as we were getting ready for this performance here at PantheaCon, and now, you know, fortunately, it's going to open up and we'll be able to focus on again. But I have, I think, about 8 people here and there in Ireland and eastern parts of the U.S. and Amsterdam and all over the place working with me on this, translating these things that are handwritten in many cases, and, you know, sometimes written on an old-fashioned typewriter, but certainly not digital, and turning them into digital Word documents. And we have gotten to the point where I've been able to actually make a print, an actual physical copy of the book from the digital master now, and with, you know, some of the art is in it. It's not complete, but we're getting there. We're probably about 75% complete with all the digitizing of all the parts of the book, and it's an exciting process. The material is just precious. It consists of all the lore and the poetry and the rituals and the writings of Fred Adams and Svetlana, and to a lesser degree, but certainly importantly, Richard Steinweg, and a few other people that were very active in Farrafaria. And so this is going to be called The Book of Farrafaria, Myth, Lore, and Rituals. And it's currently standing at about 700 pages. So it's a big, long book, and a huge project to undertake. But fortunately, I've got a lot of help. So I think I'm hoping that we can get it finished and, you know, printed and available to people before the end of the year. I really would like it if we could get it by, you know, October,
which is kind of
the new year for
this book.
Yeah,
Joe, do you think this book now? Let's say that somebody in a completely isolated area had a copy of this book. Could they do Farrafaria from the book? Could they recreate it?
They could. You know, I'll be honest with you. I have to chat with you and the other board members to really think about, do we want to include the initiation? And that's probably something we should talk about off the air. But that's something we have to figure out, is whether we should do that. Because if we do that, then, yeah, people can really do the whole system. And if we don't do that, then they can do 90% of the system. But, of course, that essential... Do you want to give away the most essential kernels of it to just anybody that wants to buy a book? I don't know. It's an unknown for me.
You will make the decision because you... advise and consent or whatever, but you make the decision on that. But the main thing is this will be sans formal initiation. This will be just about what you've in a way it'll be like Rigardi's Golden Dawn. It'll be enough to where you really have a complete grasp on Farrafaria, and once you have it you'll know. I've gone through the rough copies that you've given me, and it looks like you've got a pretty complete complete as far as it isn't all of Fred's work or Svetlana's work, but it's the work that goes into the system itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, certainly
yeah.
A person can experience fairfaria on a really deep level, or they can experience it on a kind of an LITE light level. There are daily rituals that persons can do. There are weekly rituals.
Yeah.
And there are the seasonal rituals, and there's also personal practice. So all of those things are in the book. And if somebody is, you know, reads these and wants to go ahead and make their own, you know, choose from those things the ones that they want to incorporate into their personal practice, they can do it on whatever level. They can do it either daily or weekly or monthly or just on the seasonals, and that's all available, and it's really fine. Whatever a person wants to incorporate is great. Any part that they want to use is going to give them a deeper sense of identity with the living earth, and they're going to give them more of a direct connection with the fae. So I'm hoping that whatever person's practice is, that they can at least incorporate some of the fairfairia material, because it's going to add to it.
For our listeners that do not know what fairfairia is, or in case some people are listening who have never heard us talk about this before, what I'm going to say now, I want you to correct me and add to and amplify and whatever, but fairfairia is the first, as far as I know, it is the first American expression of neo-pagan goddess worship, earth-centered, ecologically aware, and classically inspired. What I mean by that, the ancient Greek myths and the Minoan civilization, and the classical aspect, all the way up through into the Celtic and the Druidic and whatever, that ensouls and nature and relates nature all the way out to the galaxy. I mean, bringing it all down, but primarily in a goddess-oriented framework. And it, you could say that the key, and here again, correct me if I'm wrong, but the key inspirations for this that you can get that are available are Robert Graves' book, The White Goddess, and Fred, of course, and Svetlana both visited Robert Graves over in Majorca. Robert Graves, The White Goddess, there are a couple of other books which I'll let you mention, Joe, besides The White Goddess, that sort of give you a peg on this. But The Eleusinian Mysteries, the Greek Eleusinian Mysteries, Mysteries of Eleusis, that was the structure. Graves' book gave it that whole European classical perspective. And then Graves, of course, also extends out into the Druidic. And it was Graves' concept that the Druidic and the Celtic was very much influenced by and carried through some of the Orphic and the Greek mysteries that they went on into the Druidic. So what we have here is a recreation of the spirituality of the pagan Mediterranean and Europe, and you might say it's the religion of the elves and the fairies and of course it is eminently feminist in the sense of the Kori, is the maiden savioress, and this is really the origin, I think, the original American neo-pagan religion. Now, what would you add to that, Joe, or correct or whatever?
I'd say you did a pretty good darn good job there. Let's see. Sometimes it's called a love culture for wilderness. I think that it's kind of interesting when people talk about the mysteries of Eleusis. I think, you know, probably half of your audience is going to know exactly what you're talking about, and the other half is going to go, what's that? I've never heard of it. So I want to just say a little bit that what that is it was a religious initiatory system that took place in Greece in the town of Eleusis, 20 miles from Athens, for almost 2,000 years. And as such, it's the longest lasting religion of ancient times anywhere. And people came from all over the kind of known world at the time to be initiated there. The only requirements were you had to be able to speak and understand Greek, and you could not have blood on your hands. In other words, you couldn't have committed murder. And it wasn't, you could be a slave, you could be a patrician, you could be, it didn't matter. It was democratic in that regard. It was completely open to everybody with those two requirements. And it was a celebration and deep, profound experience of reenactment in a way of the what we call a myth of the loss of Persephone from Demeter, when Persephone was out in the fields picking flowers, and then up out of the hole in the earth came Pluto, and he took her away and ravished her in the underworld, or maybe didn't ravish her, but maybe it was consensual, who knows, but she became the queen of the dead, because she stayed there with him. She was going to come back, she wanted to come back, and her mother, Demeter, which literally means the mother, Demeter means the mother, and her mother was sad, and her mother was actually the great mother, in the sense that she was in charge of all life on earth, and she wasn't going to let anything grow. She was too sad. She was sat crying, and she went all of everywhere looking for her daughter, and nobody knew where her daughter was. And finally it came forth that Hecate had seen what had happened, but she wasn't saying anything. And then finally she found out from Hecate what happened, and the gods up on Olympus were becoming upset, not because they cared one way or another what happened to poor little Persephone, but because the humans they didn't have any animals or grains to come and sacrifice in it with them anymore, and they weren't getting their incenses and their burnt offerings. So the gods were like, well, this doesn't work. We're not getting any of our sacrifices. So they prevailed on Zeus, and Zeus made a deal with Pluto that, in fact, Persephone would be released. Well, Pluto was okay with this, except he didn't really want to release her, and so he made a little move to make sure that she would have to come back, which is that he gave her seeds from the pomegranate, and she ate either three, or it's debated how many seeds, but she had to come back for 1 month for each seed that she ate, and then she came back up to the earth and was received with great gladness by her mother Demeter, and then, of course, all the things were allowed to fruit and flower again, and at that point, Demeter, in her joy, gave to Triptolemus, who was a young man, a mythical hero of the Greeks, she gave to him the secret of how the grain grows and how to plant and sow and reap the grain. And so that was the beginning of their story of the beginning of the agricultural cycle and of agriculture itself. So then the mysteries of Eleusis both explain this and demonstrate it and celebrate it, and at their core, I've been doing kind of reading these great texts that Fred had in his collection. What you had with these people went there, they fasted and they danced and they stayed up all night, and it was this big thing that took place every year in September in Eleusis, and they walked all the way from Athens to get there. And they were in a very altered state by the time they actually got there, because halfway across the bridge they drank the Kikion, and the Kikion had a special barley-based brew in it, and nobody knows exactly whether it had hallucinogenic herbs in it or not. It's speculated that it might have been hallucinogenic. And at any rate, they were definitely in an altered state. Just maybe it was from the expectation or from the fasting or from the long journey. But they got there, and they stayed up all night, and then they had this experience, which was definitely aligned to seeing and something, and all the indications are what the thing that they saw was, they saw Persephone coming up from the dead. And this was their reassurance that life itself could go on, that somehow there would be a process whereby just because you died in your body didn't mean you would stay dead, that life would somehow go on. And they were so sure of this. I mean, I'm not saying this is exactly what they saw, but it looks like that's what they saw. And they were so sure of this that after that they no longer feared death. And thousands of people went through this initiation over the almost 2,000 years that it was offered. Thousands and thousands of people received this initiation. No one ever spilled the beans, which is pretty amazing because it was forbidden to tell anybody what you experienced. And that's what our initiation is based on, is that experience.
This is the essence, of course, of the and the true value of what we call paganism is to attune you to nature and the seasons and the cycle of birth and rebirth and all of this is, and in comparison to these biblical religions, which are more or less a march from Eden to the apocalypse. You know, I mean, in other words, their celebrations are more historical than they are seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and you know, as Joseph Campbell has pointed out over and over again, that the pagan experience tunes you up with the seasons and the earth and your environment, and it makes for a more harmonious and we like to think a loving, harmonious, sympathetic human being who is not looking forward to some kind of end of the world or judgment day or anything like that. It's a very, very spiritually healthy and a very spiritually satisfying attitude, I think. And Farrah-Fairy, of course, is the, in my opinion anyway, is the penultimate of this. It's intellectual, certainly. It's very philosophical. Fred was a magnificent scholar, and so was Svetlana. And so this is high church. I mean, this is not a pop culture religion at all. And yet, I think it can be appreciated on a simple level. I think that people can do this, and if they don't quite get all of the philosophical nuances of it, maybe they don't get them consciously, but the subconscious, I think, does. You know, it's like Fred's recitations. Sometimes you don't understand half of what he's saying, but your conscious mind doesn't, but your subconscious mind does.
Well, certainly it's
would you agree with that?
Poetry. Yeah, it's very much true. But I think that's always true. You get a certain thing going when you have the things rhyming and the person's, you know, going forward, and you don't always understand every word you write, but at the same time, there is something in you that really does get it. And poetry is, as Robert Graves made very clear, it's a religion of its own. It really is. And that was very much part of Farrah-Fairy, and it continues to be, that the use of poetry is really strong in our rituals, and songs. The way, we had a lovely singer named Claire Hedin who did some beautiful, beautiful songs to each of the deities as they came forth, which I was very pleased with.
Yeah. Now, you know, I want you to talk about your film and how we go ahead and get Dancing with Gaia, because this is the best way, really, for us to share the essence of this experience that we were able to do up at Pantheacon, is to have our listeners get a hold of that beautiful video of yours.
Right.
And
there are actually
shots of
Farrah-Fairy in the video. There are actually some clips from back in the 1970s when we did the original Farrah-Fairy film that became part of Dancing with Gaia. And, so we have a website, which is dancingwithgaia.com, and people can look at a trailer there and look at interviews with people and pictures of the great sacred places that I went to make the film, and can order it if they are inclined to. It comes with a lovely 45-page color booklet with lots of further information about how to basically get the ideas of Farrah-Fairy and Periphery totally inspired this film. It was a direct outgrowth of my initial interviews with Fred Adams and him pushing me to go ahead and interview other people, especially women, to get all these ideas that he felt so strongly about, being voiced by a lot of other people, because it's just such important material and so many people are involved with it, and it made sense to, you know, to explore all the different ways that we could find where people giving voice to these ideas. So that's available.
And along with that, you have a film that you did years ago, and of course, as I said, we brought up some of the ropes from that film you did in 1974, and you now have a short. Well, that's not as long as it used to be, but you have you've been working on a reissue of that. Haven't you? I mean, can we?
I have, and
that's
I'm embarrassed to say that I still don't have it up on YouTube. It's definitely my goal. I want to make it available on both YouTube directly and then on the Feraferia website. It's called Feraferia, A Dance for the Goddess, and it basically is the four main, I wouldn't say main, but for the solstices and equinoxes, it's those four celebrations that they did back in the 70s in appropriate seasonal locations that really express the essence of each season. And then I did a one-year-long time-lapse shot to kind of visually tie them together. And Fred created special sort of tarot-style art for, you know, that really were, you know, was his image for each of those moments in the season. So that's really what the film is. It's kind of a shorter film. It's like 15 minutes or so. Yeah.
Well, along with that, I believe that it's available that the Tom Snyder Show, the Tomorrow Show from 1974, Halloween 1974. And
right.
Then again on Halloween 1975, NBC liked it so much they reran
fall.
It.
Yeah, it had fall and winter parts, not all of them.
Yeah, we didn't have all of them, but it had enough. The Tom Snyder Show. That's the Tomorrow Show from 1974, and again on 1975. They reran it on 1975. And that's on the internet. You can find that. You can Google that, Tom Snyder's Tomorrow Show, and Feraferia, and I think you can find it. And that
very poor
is,
quality, I will say. After it's been, you know, whatever process they used to get that on television, it isn't real good quality. But okay, it's
yeah,
there,
and see, you did. You also did the OTA footage. You shot the OTA footage that's
right.
in the same film. That's where we didn't shoot it for that. You were already into production on that, but we used some of the footage from Feraferia, Dance for the Goddess on that show, as Persephone especially, I remember. And then now the other thing is that we have, and we ran off a reprinting of Fred's art portfolio, The Nine Royal Passions of the Year. And we still have a lot of copies of this, and they're beautiful, tarot-like, iconic paintings of each one of the nine ceremonies, and along with Fred's calligraphic descriptions in his own calligraphy on each side, kind of like William Blake in a way. And this is a folio, saddle stitch, kind of a magazine sort of folio, and we have this available, and I'm sending these out. Myself, I'm in our associate member program. We're sending a copy of this goes along with our seasonal ceremony book, and we don't charge for it if you get our seasonal ceremony book. But you can get it also from us, or you can get it on Amazon. You have to dig a little bit on Amazon. Amazon can't quite figure out how to classify it, but it's Nine Royal Passions of the Year, and it's really, I think it's It's a beautiful thing. I don't know. You think it might be a little sexy, it's a little sexy. But I was in good spirit. I mean, it was sexy in a very nice and playful kind of a way. But we got lots of those available, and we had them available up there at Pantheacon. Is there anything else, Joe, that you'd like to tell us about? We're getting toward the end of the hour, you'd like to cover?
If we have a few minutes, I just was thinking that maybe I could just mention a few of the other really excellent shows or events that they had there that I went to, or maybe you could, if you want, you could talk about something else. That's all right. But if you want to give me a moment, I'll say a few things about some of the other really excellent items that I saw there.
Yeah, right. Go ahead.
There was a really, really nice show, or not show, presentation by someone. His name is Michael Rowdery, and called, now I might butcher the pronunciation, Ektri Isling Imrama. And this is Celtic Reconstructionism is this movement, which some of your listeners are probably familiar with. People that have a call to the ancient Scots and Irish Celtic heritage, and they're pulling up information using archaeological stuff and anthropological material and as much research as they can find, communicating with each other using a lot of digital back and forth and discussions and trying things out to recreate, literally reconstruct what the faith and the practices were of the people of those eras, of the ancient eras and times. And what he was presenting on was specifically that the Ektri was earth-based journeys and journeying. And we're talking by journeying, I mean in the sense of like vision questing, okay? And then Isling was water-based journeying, like voyages, sea-based voyages, or anything to do with water. And then Imrama was more like in the air. They didn't apparently have the classic, what we think of as so much the earth, air, fire, and water elements in all of their materials. It was really these three things, the land, the water, and the air. And so the air was specifically for the types of the fire in the head type, experiences, ecstatic, out of your mind, astral travel, whatever you might want to call it, type experiences. And he kind of talked about what those were, and then led a short guided journey, literally across water. And we all experienced that. So that was a real nice presentation and very well done. Then I was sitting behind you, and I bet you didn't know it, for Chick Cicero's second presentation. And he talked, as you say, about Israel Regardi, and was pretty darn funny talking about the Inferno that he managed to get going as a nightclub, and taking, this is pretty funny, Israel Regardi there, and Regardi's like going to this nightclub with all these fancy dancers there wearing very little other than G-strings, and it turns out that they're all initiates in his Golden Dawn system, and they've all got his book that Regardi just came out with on the Golden Dawn, and they're all putting the book in his face and saying, here's, autograph my book, and kind of waving their little tassels in front of him.
Regardi would love that.
Sitting there with a red face.
Regardi would love that. He would, the last thing in the world he was a prude. Yeah.
I thought Chick's
presentation was just delightful.
Yeah.
And delightful and also insightful too, because even though Chick, was very fond of the OTO and he was doing the OTO and all that, but both Grady and Regardi both said you can't do the Golden Dawn and the OTO together. You got to do one or the other, and you can't mix them up. And I thought, yeah. Okay, next week we're going to update the associate member program, and we're going to talk about all the new projects we have underway. We're doing the Path Workings as a DVD, and we got that in the works right now, and we're going to talk about that. We're also going to have call-ins, and we want you guys to call in and And you guys and gals, give us a call and let us know how we're doing. And we'll recap the, as I say, the associate member program. And meanwhile, good magic.